Skincare experts and dermatologists have often touted the benefits of indoor humidity as essential for healthy, glowing skin. But did you know dry air can start to harm your skin in as little as 30 minutes? For years, many people have relied on humidifiers for better skin, sleep, and overall wellness. But traditional models? Bulky, mold-prone, and difficult to maintain. That's where Canopy Humidifier comes in. Recommended by leading dermatologists, Canopy is a completely reimagined humidifier designed to elevate any space, offering the ultimate in skincare and wellness benefits. Canopy's clean moisture combats dryness, dullness, and fine lines while strengthening the skin's barrier and boosting the effectiveness of topical skincare products. With its sleek design, Canopy is the cleanest and easiest humidifier on the market. With its unique technology, cleaning is as easy as popping it in the dishwasher. Go to getcanopy.co to save $25 on your Canopy humidifier purchase today with Canopy's filter subscription. Even better, use code PODCAST at checkout to save an additional 10% off your Canopy purchase. Your skin will thank you.
You're listening to Power Athlete Radio, a podcast dedicated to empowering your performance every damn day. Join former NFL pro and Power Athlete founder John Wellborn as he dissects the greatest minds in strength, conditioning, and more. So whether your goal is to be the hammer, destroy mediocrity, or simply move the dirt, you've come to the right place. Now with the warm-up done, let the gains begin.
We interrupt this episode with a shameless self-promotion. Are you a field or court sport athlete looking to dominate the leaderboard? Let me introduce you to Field Strong. Take your inner athlete to the next level by exposing yourself to the advanced training techniques that contributed to my 10 years in the NFL. Unlock pinnacle performance and level up your athletic potential today. Head to powerathletehq.com/fieldstrong and claim your 7-day free trial. Now back to the show. You don't get requests for podcasts, or do they people not think to like hit up offensive linemen for podcasts?
I just don't know how many guys are really doing it. I haven't seen a whole lot of podcasts with other offensive linemen on it. I feel like, you know, you just see the defensive end, you know, 2-sack game. He's going on the podcast talking about how great he is. Yeah, it's mostly just locker room interview and, you know, keep it short and sweet and kind of keep it pushing.
So is there, are you telling me that there is a potential market for us to start a podcast where it's just primarily talking to other offensive linemen?
I could see the market opportunity for that. I mean, like you said, there's a collective group of guys that are really interesting, different hobbies, you know, different personalities. How does the room kind of fit together? And it'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, no, I, dude, we're going to talk about this because I think that the market needs this. And on top of it, you know, like the only time I ever see any offensive line stuff, it's your, you know, your mentor, your life coach, your body double, Big Duke. And I think we need to bring this thing back a little bit from Big Duke and, like, you know, bring it back to, like, you know, because most offensive linemen are usually pretty sharp. They're like esoteric thinkers. They're, you know, they're guys that understand teamwork, but they also understand dynamics and everybody kind of fits in. Occasionally you get a few guys that are mouth breathers, but for the most part, offensive linemen are usually pretty funny. They're by far the funniest, most intellectually stimulating people on all of my offense, like on all the teams I played on. Like offensive line dudes are always like, I mean, I had Runyon. I mean, Runyon is by far one of the funnier dudes, but yet like nobody knows it.
Yeah, no, I mean, like usually the offensive linemen are, you know, sticking together. Like in our locker room, we have a little campfire kind of session that goes on after practice. We all bought these, the rookie bought it for us, these like reclining chairs. We kind of just, you know, sit down after post practice debrief, you know, bust balls about what happened to practice and all stuff. And it's great. It's my favorite time of the day when we finish practice, the day's over, and we just get to sit down, shoot the shit for a little bit, and, you know, kind of have this little, you know, campfire moment right after practice is over.
Dude, that's super sharp. You guys don't meet right after practice to watch the film?
We do some days. Usually like the Wednesday practice, the longer days is go in there, watch the film, chop it up, and then, you know, you get out. But, yeah, it's been kind of nice in some ways. We get out pretty early. Coach takes care of us, so that's nice, too. Kind of get your body work in, your mental kind of recovery with the guys. So, you know, there's a little bit of benefit to doing it both ways.
You're in your fifth year. I know you guys got a bunch of young guys. Who's the oldest guy on your offensive line?
Brian O'Neill, team captain, right tackle guy I get to play next to. Really good leader, really good player. It's been fun playing next to him. You know, just a great athlete, you know, out in space. You know, some big pancakes on screens this year. Phenomenal pass protector, works really well, you know, passing off games and stuff like that. So kind of like you were saying, when we do that campfire thing post-practice, I think all those moments when you do stuff outside the building kind of brings the group closer together. And I really think that has a big impact on how the group plays on the field together.
Yeah. For offensive line, like, I don't know if people realize it, but most of the guys kind of fit within the same general framework. So you end up kind of befriending other offensive linemen. And next thing you know, you go out to dinner and you hang out, and these are just kind of your friends. And there's definitely an interesting dynamic when the guy that you're playing next to is a good friend of yours. You know, like, you've eaten dinner at his house, you know his kids, you know his wife, you know his family, and like, you guys are pretty close. It's definitely a different feeling opposed from playing with guys that you really don't fucking like. And if the car was broken down on the side of the road, you just drive past them with like a middle finger, you know? yeah. So like, you know, most offensive linemen or offensive lines have good camaraderie because of that. But how old is the right tackle?
I think he just turned 30.
So he's in his like seventh, eighth year?
Yeah, eighth, maybe going to nine, something like that. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but it's got to be something like that.
Yeah, dude. And then you guys got a ton of young guys. Oh,
sorry. And then we had, sorry to cut you off, we had Ryan Kelly too. I played with at the Colts. He's going into his 10th year. He's got three kids who I've been close with for a really long time. So we had a bunch of old guys in the room this year. It was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Isn't it crazy? You're like, yeah, dude, that fucking old guy that's 30 years old with three kids. You're like, God damn, this guy. I remember when I was a young guy, if you were 30, you might as well have been 400.
And I feel like... when you get the scouting report on like the other teams, and you know, they kind of highlight the guys, if you're 30, you're highlighted in red, and it's like, you know, this guy is, you know, a target we have to get after. I'm like, I still see like a lot of really good 30-year-old players out there. Like, I don't know where this idea came from, but like, it's fucking crazy,
dude.
I like, maybe it's different now than it was when you played. Like,
no,
their bodies a little better, but it's fucking insane.
Dude, I remember being 29. And, you know, my birthday's in March, the end of March. So, off season, I remember I left and I was 29 and then I came back at 30 and it was as if, like death was on me. Like everybody was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then all of a sudden it was like, you turned 30 and they were like, you know, you're 30 now. And I remember being like, well, I was just 29, like a few months ago. Like, why is it that's like nothing's changed? And it was this complete, like, and I remember the same thing, sitting in meetings, looking at the scouting report and being like, oh, you know, this guy's getting up there. He's getting a little long on the tooth. He's a little old. He's about to turn 30. And like, there was such a weird perception of like, you know, 29 is fine, 30s, you know, but then like, I felt like it changed, you know, I mean, what's his name? The guy that was playing left tackle for the Rams, Whitman?
Whitworth,
yeah. Yeah. Whitworth? Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Andrew yeah. Whitworth, yeah.
Yeah, he was fucking hot garbage. When he played for Cincinnati, he was trash, dude. He wasn't very good, and he wasn't very good at the Rams, but he just happened to be around long enough, and he's a big dude and got people's way, and now he's got a shaved head and he's on fucking TV. And they, you know, NFL Man of the Year, like, that dude beat up nobody. He was out there like, and I'm just being honest, probably super nice dude, NFL Man of the Year, not to throw any shade at him, but like, there's a situation where like, that dude, you know, gray beard out there, like, looked like Father Time, and I was like, Jesus Christ. Like, that guy might as well have been 400 years old, but like, they still had faith in him. So it's pretty interesting how like, guys kind of get into this kind of role and they're able to kind of transcend it, like, you know, Tom Brady or him and some of the other guys. Whereas other dudes, like 30 years old, you're fucking out. And it was kind of annoying because, you know, like, you still feel like you have good football in you, and they just kind of fucking treat you like hired help. And like, you know, you're out the door, you're only under 30, you know, next year you're going to be really old. You're going to be 31. And you're like, fuck, dude, you guys, like, so I think because of that, you know, I viewed 30 as like, you might as well have been 400 and then to be 40. And now, you know, closer to 50, like, yeah. I never even thought that, I never even thought about how far that was. I was like, fuck, I just kind of figured you'd be dead by that point in life. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is brought to you by the Business of Strength. Imagine making this your strongest business year yet. With more revenue, better systems, and a gym that practically runs itself. Sounds like a dream. But that's exactly what the Strongest Year Project delivers. It's a 12-month mastermind for gym owners, packed with one-on-one coaching, real-world systems, bi-weekly calls, and a roadmap to transfer your business from inside and out, just like they did at Varsity House Gym. Ready to stop guessing and start growing? Go to businessofstrength.com/attend and join the Strongest Year Project today.
it's funny, but it's like, I feel like, you know, contractually too, it's like guys that are 30 and like, you're like, oh man, you had a really good year, like probably get extended to like, you know, 3 year, like good level deal. And it's like one year deal. And it's like, they kind of just keep hanging on, like, mercenary.
Yeah. Dude, I remember in my You know, I got done with the Chiefs and I went into my 10th year, and all of a sudden, like, people are offering me like 1 year deals with like veteran minimum with like all of these like insane, you know, playoff bonuses and like all of this stuff. And I was like, yeah, I mean, like, you guys, I was like, dude, I just started every game of my NFL career that I was like, you know, was healthy for, right? I mean, the ones I missed from injury, and all of a sudden, like, you guys are offering me veteran minimum. I mean, so like, you have to, and for you, you're in a great position because, you know, you obviously have that deal, but like, you know, 5 years and four, they're going to come back, and hopefully in three or something, maybe they renegotiate it. And then you can kind of like push past that in the renegotiation. Whereas, I didn't really think about that. Like, nobody said like, hey, you need to potentially re-sign a deal when you're 27 and 28 at the height so that you can push into your 30s. And I think that's, you know, and then if you have big money up front and a bunch of stuff and you're still playing at a high level, like, they're okay with it. Like, oh, he's our guy, you know, but fucking, yeah. You know, it's just it's a weird, weird deal. So obviously super stoked to get you on the podcast. I'm glad that I get to be your first memorable podcast. So I appreciate, you know, that form of, you know, me taking your, you know, podcasting virginity. Can I say that? It's kind of a little,
yeah, I guess, like,
it's kind of a little creepy. Maybe. Are you a born again now? I mean, did you know, you born signed a
podcast?
Did you sign a big contract and now you became a God squatter?
No, I mean, teach their own, I guess, but I,
well,
in still the, me. That's the only thing. I'm still me.
Well, in the NFL, the biggest guys that end up becoming big God squatters, it's usually on the heels of doing something fucked up. Like, you get a DUI, you beat your wife, you get caught for cheating, then you have to go back to God. And then that's when you start carrying the Bible around. You got to get some, you know, religious tattoos. And so it's pretty funny. We used to see guys and be like, oh, he's got to go to Jesus, you know, to like prove that he's a good guy after being a piece of shit. God, the NFL is fucking amazing.
So, a crazy place.
Well, what was fun was working with you. And then, you know, as you kind of got to see a little bit of it, and then me being able to like feed a lot of my like 10-year veteran stuff in you, I saw like us having conversations and like light bulbs go off and you'd be like, I never fucking thought of that. That's fucking crazy. Yeah. And so, yeah, hopefully now you can be the voice in the locker room or within your offensive line and tell the young guys and fucking set them straight on shit.
Yeah, no, it was awesome coming down there. I guess publicly say I really appreciate having me down there. Like, I had to learn a lot, you know, training wise, you know, football wise, mentality wise, like, and it really helped me going into that fourth year of the league before I, you know, got injured and stuff like that. But yeah, it was a blast. Like a lot of the stuff you taught me, I still use, and you know, whether it's just, you know, mentality, keeping shit simple, or you know, kind of stuff we would do on the weekends, you know, running off the ball and. All of it really helped, and I still use a lot of it too. So, I mean, it was a great experience for me to come down there and get to train for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I like watching you on film. You know, my only critique is, I think you guys play too high. Like, you can bend, you're a knee bender, you have good flexibility, you can drive your knees out, you can get into position. And I think all that comes from is just the fact that, like, everybody plays so fucking high. Like, I was watching you out there, and, like, it was funny, that first couple games, and I hit you up, and, like, it's all of a sudden, you, like, I saw you sinking a little bit lower, getting your butt down, and then you started moving dudes off the ball. But it was kind of funny, like, how high people are, and it just, that was something that I always looked at. But, no, man, I thought you played great, and it sucked that you got hurt. But, you know, and I remember after you got hurt, your wife called me. And I was like, I think he's done enough. And like, I was kind of like thinking, I was like, well, shit, man, like, he's played enough. And then, you know, be coming off that injury and sign a monster deal and then get a chance to go to Minnesota. And, you know, when did you end up starting 17 games this year and being healthy? And
yeah,
I mean, it's fucking awesome, dude.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah. Like, between all the stuff that, you know, taking care of my body and coming off the injury and the stuff that you helped me with, you know, kind of just like the nutrition aspect and the supplements and the recovery, the PIMF, like all that stuff, like, it was like a long journey of a year of like getting back on the field. And like, you know, when you're playing, your only goal is to play the best you can. But it's like, when you get hurt, now you have you have to refocus your mission. It was just the only thing I was focused on was coming back. And you helped me out a lot with that. So, you know, spent the whole year grinding out doing that. And, you know, leg didn't feel good, you know, really much of the year, but I was able to, you know, start 17 of them. So I was really proud of that.
Well, yeah. And, you know, like that also dispels a lot of myths, you know, like, I'm sure there were people when, you know, you went into free agency coming off that injury and you signed that big deal. I'm sure that there was fucking pieces of shit, general managers and fucking shitty scouts that are like, you know, like fucking harumph, harumph, you know, not like, you know, I don't know if he, you know, like casting fucking doubt on you. And those people are notoriously shitty for that, because unless, you know, it's their idea or they think this guy's great, everybody else is a fucking idiot. So I'm stoked that Minnesota put a bunch of faith in you and signed you. And I thought, dude, I thought you guys did great, man. I was rooting for you, other than the fact that I think your coach doesn't like to run the fucking ball. But that makes sense. And I think the most hilarious thing is he was our rookie quarterback when I was at the Patriots. And then all of a sudden I'm looking, I'm like, I know that fucking guy. And he sucked as a quarterback. And then he never gave you guys a fucking chance to run the ball. So I was stoked that you guys did so well, man. I thought your defense fucking stepped up. And like, I was stoked to just see you guys. I mean, I would have liked to see you guys run the ball a little bit more, but I have a feeling maybe in the offseason you guys will get like a little help in terms of like, you know, I mean, dude, everybody's going back to like bringing a fullback in and having like a legitimate runner. I mean, because I feel like if you're going to do it, you got to have somebody that's going to go out and run the rock for 300 yards.
Yeah, no, I mean, like, not like fit, obviously the whole season, like not going the way we wanted to. I think we finished on a really strong note, like winning five in a row.
Yeah.
Even though we were out of it for a while, I think just kind of shows like we have a lot of really good dudes on our team that care, and it's like a lot of really positive stuff to carry into this off season and take it the next year. Like we kind of proved that we have the guys to do it, and it's kind of just about, you know, starting a little bit stronger, continuing that momentum through the beginning of the year, and we show that we can finish it strong, and you know, why not do it again?
Yeah, well, and you also are carried all the momentum into next season. You know, I always remember on the teams where you start fast and you taper off, there's almost this feeling of like going into the off season, but you guys ended on such a high note, man. I was really pulling for you guys. It was awesome to see. So, I have a couple questions I kicked over to you that I wanted to address on this thing, seeing as this is going to be the podcast going into the Super Bowl. And I thought these are kind of funny questions just for the fact I want to hear your perception, but like how much and I can answer this, and I'm sure you can too, but like how much do you really enjoy like the Super Bowl as a player? Like I know you were probably not going to the Super Bowl. I never went. I like the thought of like having to battle through the crowds and this, like I wish I'd gone to see the spectacle, but like just the thought of having to navigate like the fucking commotion and the parking and getting to the seats like gives me anxiety. But like, as you sit down and watch the game, like how much do you really enjoy it? And like, you know, I know it'd be a hell of a lot more fun to be playing in it, but like watching it, it was like kind of a weird kind of bittersweet where you're watching these guys, you know them on film, and then they're in this big situation. And there's always this feeling of like, fuck man, I want to be there.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. Like that's always the goal. Like I'll probably never go unless I'm playing in the game. Like I do enjoy watching it because of, you know, you play these teams throughout the year. You know, we played Seattle this year and they got, you know, got after us pretty good, unfortunately. We played New England. We had a couple joint practices against them, so we got to see them firsthand. It's like the league is just so tight as a whole, and it's like these teams that are kind of able to find a way to finish at the end and string together some consistency, like that's where you get the edge. Like every team has talented players, and it's like, even though we didn't finish where we went to, it's like you really feel like you're not that far off. And I didn't get from like, you know, optics and stuff like that, like on the outside, it's like, no, you're like, you're not even close. You didn't make the playoffs and all that stuff. But like, it's really like the game is so tight and every game is so competitive. You know, I think like it's got to be like 80% of the games are a one score game. Like everything is just so tight. And it's like, I you know, like it's out there in front of you and you just kind of have to string together, you know, that little bit extra that, you know, other teams, you know, can't do in the end.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a interesting thing to like see there and like, you know, and for teams that don't get a chance to go to the Super Bowl or don't go deep in the playoffs, it's almost like this, like mythical island that they hear about, they never get to. You know, we had Joe Thomas on the podcast and, you know, he never played in a playoff game. And like when we were on, you know, he went, you know, played 13 years in the Hall of Fame and this whole deal, and he never saw anybody on their best day. And he said it on the podcast. He's like, yeah, you know, everybody came to play for Cleveland. Like, they knew we were never in the playoff hunt. I never got anybody on their best day. And I liked it that way, which was the exact opposite of my mentality. I wanted I wanted the best player on the biggest day on the biggest stage to have their best game and, like, let me see exactly. So it was funny, as we were talking about it, I was like, holy shit, my whole thinking was a 180, but I also played in 3 NFC championship games and 10 playoff appearances and, like, was, like, knocking on the door of going to the Super Bowl and playing on playoff games. And it just was a very interesting mentality. How fucking loud is Seattle?
Seattle's a brutal place to play. It was loud. I mean, the fans were into the whole time. I think we were down, had to be 3 scores, and it was still loud. Like, it was pretty miserable. But
it's crazy because the stadium almost goes up and it curves and it feels like the people are on top of you.
It's probably the most college-like feel NFL scene that you can get to. I mean, I haven't played in every place. I haven't played in Arrowhead and a couple of these other pretty loud places. But playing at Penn State, you know, obviously a pretty loud environment. Big Ten, you know, you go to play Ohio State, really loud. Iowa's really loud. Like, it feels like that. It just, for the amount of people they have in NFL stadiums, like, they created a lot of volume and it's hard to communicate out there. It was not fun.
So that's a good segue. Like, how much freedom do you have to, like, you know, make calls and call things out? I mean, obviously the center comes down, he's always going to call the mic and kind of direct the protection, but as they start kind of breaking into the audibles or as you guys get into stuff, like, do you have, like, freedom to kind of make some changes? Or even when you come over on the sideline, they start, you know, I'm sure when you guys all sit down, they come over with the blocking sheets and they're fucking annoying the shit out of you with a bunch of stuff. You already know what's happening. You know, my always favorite was they come over, they're like, what's happening out there? And you're like, aren't you watching the fucking game? Like, isn't somebody in your ear? And like, we would, you know, sit down and, like, give them, be like, hey, I know the game plan you guys put in and what you want to do, but it's not working because we're doing this. We need to do this. But I think playing on, like, with some veteran guys, you know, I was fortunate to play with, like, you know, Willie Rofe and Will Shields and, you know, Brian Waters and these guys who were, like, you know, fucking Hall of Fame veterans. So, like, I felt like the coaches were more willing. I just wonder, like, you being new in the first year and, like, kind of, like, having some young guys, if they allowed you to have that level of input.
Yeah, I think it kind of starts back to when I was in Indy and Quentin Nelson, like, did a really good job. And, like, I mean, super smart player. Like, he was able to see, like, a lot of things, like, really clearly, you know, guys blitzing, you know, tendencies. And, like, he talked a lot at the line. And I think I really, you know, learned that from him and tried to carry it over the best I could. Like, if you're having, you know, some sort of power play and you see, you know, the nine tech, you know, kind of start to inch down, like, you got to call that out, you know, so he knows where he's pulling, fitting in, like, without, you know, messing up, you know, the QB and whatever he's looking at. Like, there's a lot of communication that goes on, like, right in front of you. And if you can tell a guy's tightening down, like, it's important that you let the other side know, because, you know, maybe they're running some sort of, you know, replacement pressure or something like that, and, like, can really affect the whole blocking scheme. I would say that I had good freedom to, you know, kind of call out what I saw. And, you know, you don't want to be wrong, because then guys stop trusting you. So, you know, you got to use that, you know, that power wisely. But yeah, I think that whole communication piece, like, really goes together with how, you know, what I'm seeing as right guard, you know, can affect the left tackle. It really is. Maybe, you know, the average viewer doesn't see exactly every, like, piece of it, but, like, that, you know, when the, you know, breakdowns happen, like, that can be something, you know, a piece of it, like, the communication was off, or, you know, the guard to guard wasn't hearing, you know, what, you know, maybe there's some sort of, you know, top stun inside. So there's really a lot that goes into the communication piece of it. And, you know, I take a lot of pride in, you know, A, trying to be right, but B, you know, doing enough film study that you can kind of see those things ahead of time. You know, you're not thinking too much while you're playing.
Yeah. The historically, offensive linemen always watch a lot of film. And, like, the way I've used film is it was almost like a superpower. That if I watched enough, and you get to the point where, like, you know, and the issue, and I don't know if people know this, but defensive linemen are by far the dumbest people on the entire field. When they did intelligence testing in Wonderlics, like, you know, there's a certain score range. Like, as long as the defensive linemen are able to spell their name correctly, they're considered okay. And so they're just not very smart. Like, it's just historically, like, as a group, they're just dumb fucks. And so what we would end up doing is you end up watching film and you realize that a lot of the linebackers and these guys, like, kind of, like, push these guys and come over and tap them, you know, especially if there's a twist, and you find these little tendencies to the point where, like, you know, hey, every time this guy plays in a wide three, they're going to run this when this guy's in a tight five. I mean, to the point where you're like, we've seen it on film, and you get in your stance and you're like, holy shit, it looks just like I saw it. They're not even trying to hide it. So then we used to do like, you know, like little call, like fake calls. And the funny part is I used to do fake calls, and like about 50% of the time, Trey Thomas, who I played with, would forget that we were doing dummy calls. He'd be like, no, 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 that's not the right one. And I'd be like, it's a dummy. And he'd be like, oh shit, sorry. And so then in the huddle, I would have to tell him, hey, I'm going to make a dummy call. And he's like, okay, okay. And then we'd get up there and it'd be like 50-50. But the watching of the film and like really slowing it down and looking for tendencies, you know, to the point where like all of a sudden you're like, all right, they're in cover two. This guy's going to come here. They're going to bring in this. And you start looking at like personnel packages down in distance. And I think people only think that quarterbacks look at that stuff. But, you know, usually the center's in the meeting with the quarterbacks. But I also really enjoyed like getting those cuts and looking at what they were looking for tendencies. And then, you know, that was like a really good superpower. You know, I know you guys had a young quarterback, you know, he was a first rounder in what, 2024. And so, you know, he's, you know, coming into his second year who's it, JJ McCarthy?
Yep. That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, was it like, you know, he's still relatively young. I don't think Minnesota had a great year last year and they're trying to do this rebuilding. Like, you know, was there any kind of flashes of brilliance that you saw in him where you're like, oh shit, man, this kid's really going to come into his own?
Yeah, I think if you're speaking on JJ's character, like he's got like, you know, a little bit of like moxie, like he knew like a little bit of it factor. So it makes him like really fun to play with. Like, you know, like when he's coming in the huddle, like he can, you know, catch fire at any moment. Like that's kind of like fun to see in a young guy who, you know, he's like, he's got a little something to him. But yeah, I think that you definitely saw those flashes of, you know, what he can be. Was it perfect all the time? No, but like there was, you know, big play potential, you know, all the time. And he, you know, ended up making some really good throws down the stretch there. Use his legs, you know, when he needed to. So like, I think that he's only continued to get better and develop. And like, when you believe in like, you know, the kid that, you know, he's got something to him, I think he's going to be a really good player, you know, once he comes into his own a little bit more and, you know, stays a little more even keeled. And, you know, it's all part of the learning process when you're that young.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he played at what, Michigan? I mean, you know, you play at like Michigan and some of those bigger schools. I mean, you're used to playing in like, you know, 103,000 people in a stadium. So I always think kids that get an opportunity to come from those bigger schools, when they get to the NFL, they're almost like, you know, like the joke we used to make is like, hey, you know, those kids are probably getting paid better in college than they were in the NFL, which now with the NIL is fucking true. These kids are actually taking pay cuts. They're trying to stay in college longer because, you know, like the issue, and I don't know if many people realize this, but the NFL is a very tight-knit group of individuals, and it's a very small number of people that get to do that job. When you think about the entirety of college, like there's a good chance that a kid who's making a couple million dollars in college to play goes and doesn't ever make an NFL roster. And I think that's not what, like, people think like, oh, this kid was pretty good in college. Like, I played with a ton of good college players that like never pissed a drop, like showed up and had a cup of coffee in the NFL, like just because it's just such a different game, the speed of the game. And like, just a completely different game. I mean, personally, I liked the pro game way more than college. Like I thought college was slow for things to develop. Like, you know, I felt like I had to block people for like 20 seconds and people were running around and you never knew who the quarterback was. I liked the NFL because it was like the ball snaps fast. You hit, you know, 3 seconds, you move, the ball gets in, you run downfield and then you get in it again. So just like the speed, and I don't know if it is an ADD thing, but like I love the speed of the NFL. College just felt like it was like watching paint dry all the time.
Oh no, I'm completely with you. Like I pretty much exclusively watch NFL now. Like I don't really turn college football on much at all anymore. But all the same reasons, like it's a faster game, it's more competitive. All the players, you know, the best of the best. And like, you know, I enjoyed my time and like playing there. But once I got to the NFL, I'm like, oh, I love this game way better. Like the scheme that you run, and you know how, you know, the run, the play action pass marry, and then, you know, your screens off a play action pass. Like it's just a more complete system all in all. And it's, you know, I have a lot more fun playing it. And it's kind of like to your point before, when you're talking to Joe Thomas, like you actually get to measure up, you know, how am I against these players, you know, against the best of the best. Like it's kind of fun in that way. Like when you do all this offseason training and you do all this work, it's like, I want to know, how did it work and where do I stack up, and you know, what do I need to keep getting better at?
Yeah. Well, it's, I always looked at the training space, and I'm sure you've heard me say that as ad nauseum, but like the idea of like sharpening the blade, right? Like I'm going to like make the cleanest cuts I can. I got to make sure the blade is sharp. It's strong. It's like well taken care of. And the place you do that is in the off season, and you still have to train through the season. I think what happens for a lot of people, you know, like it becomes like everything, like this is the full-time job. This is what expected me and you have to be. And they used to always say this, like, be a professional, like you're not in college anymore, even though those kids today are like pros, you know, cause they don't even go to school, I guess. But, you know, we were living like, you know, $740 a month on a scholarship check. My rent was $500 and you got like a couple $100 a month to live on. And like, you know, you're living below the poverty line. So then all of a sudden you get a chance to go to the NFL and you're like, you know, this transition to being a pro. So I'm really fascinated to see how these kids who are like massive NIL stars in college, like how they transition into the NFL, or if whether or not they peak early. Like, you know, I always wanted, you know, my best football to be, you know, like when I got to the NFL, I wanted to have my best games. I didn't want to be like, oh man. Cause I mean, we used to run in that a bunch, like guys were world beaters and these incredible college players, and they just could not ever pick up the NFL game. And, I like when I used to hear that, I was like, man, it's so weird. This feels easier. And this game is more, like, this style of football is better for me than the college stuff was. Whereas I knew other guys that were, you know, just massive world beaters in college that never really panned out in the NFL. So that's pretty wild. At Penn State, you played on turf, and then you played on turf when you were in Indy, and then you went to another turf field in Minnesota. So the entirety of your NFL career and almost all your entire college career, you've played on some form of like artificial surface. Is there like a feeling when you go play on natural grass, like, oh, thank God, or does it feel a little strange?
I like the natural grass a lot. I know there's a big debate on with the, you know, the PA stuff and trying to get it, you know, uniform. Like, to me, it doesn't really matter as much if grass versus turf. I will say, though, this is the first year I've noticed like the grass versus turf debate, like practicing on it nonstop and coming off the injury. Like, it's like, okay, like I feel the difference a little bit more now, just to, like, joint wise and, you know, my leg and stuff like that. Like, then I can feel the difference. But when you depend on that natural grass and like your jersey gets a little dirty, you know, maybe you get like a good finish and roll around on the ground, like that's a pretty cool feeling. Like, that just like feels like, you know, you're back there, you know, sixth grade football in the backyard with your buddies, you know, messing around. Like, that feels like, that's just like fun. Like, football, it's like its purest form to me.
Yeah. No, I liked playing on grass. I remember when I first went to Philly, we had this like painted concrete. And then they went to this like field turf and like, you know, with little crushed up tires, which is kind of interesting because now they found that like is causing a bunch of weird cancer in people. I'm like, God damn, like anything else. And then, awesome. And then they pulled that out and we went to grass. And I like playing on grass. Like, I don't feel like I'd always feel like my joints, like my hips and my knees and my ankles got hot when we played on like for turf for too much. And even on the practice stuff, there's just kind of like your feet get hot and it's just, I don't know. It's, but I mean, you guys play in domes and it's in Minnesota. And even though Green Bay does play outside in the grass, but I remember the first time, and I'm sure this happened to you. Was there any places that you played like where you kind of felt like the historic nature of like, holy shit, I'm playing in Green Bay? You know, and like, you know, like NFL films where they'd be like, it's a cold day in Lambeau Field. And then they'd show these things to like be there in the locker room. It's like, holy shit. Like, I'm part of the legend now.
It's super cool. Like, where we stay, the hotel we stay at, when we go to play Green Bay, you know, they have like Vince Lombardi's, you know, first playbooks kind of, you know, mounted on the wall in there. You could see the Packers sweep drawn up and, you know, these kind of old school formations. It's really cool. And then you actually go to the game day experience. And it's like Green Bay is just in like the middle of like this normal suburban town in Wisconsin. It's like all of a sudden there's a ginormous stadium. It's really cool. I enjoy the historical, just like football fan in me aspect of playing at Lambeau. Like, I'm trying to think if there's anywhere else like that, but like Lambeau is like by far the one that sticks out. I was like, this is like a cool, like just football moment. And like that I was able to experience in my career.
Yeah, we played in the last game of Soldier Field, like the old Soldier Field.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so like they weren't supposed to make the playoffs, so they were just expecting to bulldoze it, and then they had to like stop. So when we showed up, they had like all the construction equipment around, and then we ended up going playing them in the playoffs, and we beat them. And as we were walking off the field, you know, because like, you know, like, you know, at the end you go see everybody and you're kind of like milling around and like, you know, like walking off the field after this playoff win. And the construction guys started coming on the field and bringing the machinery on the field. and it was a night game. Wow. So it was like, you know, Sunday or, you know, Saturday night, I think. And these guys started rolling the stuff on, and we went in, got showered, got on the buses. And as we were sitting on the buses waiting to leave, you could see them start digging everything up. I mean, it was pretty neat, you know, to play That's in the cool. last game there, and, you know, playing in, you know, like God awful Dallas Stadium, but even like going down to Miami and Tampa and some of the other places, it's kind of neat to like just go to these different spots and, you know, experience it. And I don't know if the average fan realizes that, like, as NFL players, like, we watched this game growing up, we played in college. There's always this, you know, whether or not you know, as a little kid dreamed of playing in the NFL. I didn't. I never even thought it was much of a reality until I got to college. But, like, you know, we used to go to Raiders games, and you know, you see it as a fan, and then all of a sudden to be there, you know, like when I went to go, I remember the first time we went to play in Oakland, you know, having gone to Berkeley. Like, that was crazy to actually see the black hole, and, like, you know, as you're pulling in, there's, like, grandma, grandpa, son, daughter, and child, and, like, little kids all sitting there giving you, like, double middle fingers, like, you know, all of a sudden, like, some 60-year-old dudes, like, bare-assing you, and, like, you know, it's literally, dude, like, the fucking lowest level life form scum of the earth were the Raiders fans, and, like, the fact that, like, I didn't feel like it was going to be a good day unless I saw, like, some, like, old dude, some, like, old woman, or, like, some little kid just giving me fingers, screaming, fuck you, and I'd be like, it's going to be a good day.
This is the new Weight Watchers. It works for members like JoJo, who's learning simple, healthy habits, Sharia, who's making progress with meds, and Kim, who still gets to eat what she loves. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now it's your turn. Watch your life open up. Watch your story shift. Watch what you're capable of. Watch it work. Get started today at WeightWatchers.com.
And, that's awesome. That's like, that's what you want. Like you said, you grow up and then, you know, kind of showing that on TV, and like, this is what I dreamed about doing when I was, you know, a little kid.
Yeah. So when, JJ went down, this year, and the backup, like, came in, like, how does that, like, change, you know? 'Cause I mean, like, I don't know if the listener understands, like, in the NFL, the starters take the majority of the reps. Right. Like, yeah. I mean, it's like 100%. Like, I can't think of a time in practice where a backup ever came in who, like, you know, if, you know, like the five guys that are starting, you go out and, like, the ones take everything. Like, I don't even remember, like, the twos ever coming in. Like, maybe they rotated them in, but, like, the, you know, usually the backup quarterback's over there throwing, you know, scout team and kind of throwing against the other, getting his reps there. So, like, they don't really get a lot of opportunities to practice with the ones, maybe a little bit in training camp, but not during the season because they invest all the time in the starter. So all of a sudden when he goes down and the backup comes in, like, how did that have to change? I mean, you know, they obviously simplify the game plan, simplify the calls, but, like, you know, was it like that in your team? Is the same way?
Yeah, it was interesting for us because we had Carson Wentz, who had basically gotten there just before the season started, and, you know, came at really at the end of training camp there. So coming into a new system, obviously has a lot of experience just playing in general.
Yeah.
But to come in, like you said, like, he really had no reps, and then JJ went down after week two initially, and he had to come in and basically with no reps and had that week of practice and then went out there and, you know, slung it. You know, it's tough, but that's kind of your job. You know, anytime you're a backup in the NFL, I was, you know, a backup in the first year and a half I was there. Like, you get your practice reps against the backup players, and you're really playing against the ones when you're on the scout team. So, like, that's good. Like, that helps you get better, but you're not practicing your scheme. You're not practicing your calls. Like, so it's kind of on you to take that preparation of, you know, kind of upon yourself and be ready to play when you're called upon.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and he's an older guy. I think he's in his, you know, fucking dreaded 33 years old, like, old.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, you can bring in a veteran guy like that who steps in, who's had success. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I don't think people realize, like, in the NFL, the starters get the majority of the reps. Like, I was sitting here trying to think of, like, was there ever a moment where I was in practice, like, especially on, like, a Wednesday, Thursday, or even a Friday, where all of a sudden they sent the backup or the twos in to give you a break? I'm like, never. I mean, like never. Like, they're like, you're the starter, you get every rep, same with the quarterback. So that's You know, that's pretty good to have a guy come in like that. So what is so what's the offseason going to look like? I know you took some trips and now you're down in Arizona training. Is a bunch of the Vikings guys down there? You guys are training as a group?
Yeah, it's awesome. Got a good spot here in Arizona. This would be my fourth day down here starting training. Been good so far. A bunch of Vikings guys are down here, so that's good to kind of keep building that, you know, camaraderie and train together and be able to, you know, train as a group and kind of push each other. John Wren Jr. is down here. I know you're close with his dad, so that's cool to, you know, meeting him, training with him too.
So
it's a good group of guys. It's been a lot of fun so far. Weather's great, and I think it's kind of you know, a nice aspect of being down here is getting out of negative 20 and 30 degree weather in Minnesota and getting that natural sunlight and all that other good stuff that's good for you. So it's a cool spot down here.
John Daniel just had a baby. His dad was sending me baby pictures. That's how old we are. But it was funny because I got on the call and he kept calling him Junior. And I was like, when did you start calling John Daniel Jr.? He's like, well, you know, and it was just kind of funny. He's like, well, now he's got a baby and stuff. So it's funny to me as I knew John Daniel was like a little boy, like literally like like younger than Cash. So to see him play and like the fact that like now he's got a kid, when I talked to his dad, he's like, fuck, how old do we feel? I'm like, dude, I feel really old now. The fact that John Daniel has a baby and he's been starting and playing the NFL. But he's a good dude, man. He's a nice kid. If you see him, tell him hello for me. I haven't seen him in a long time.
Yeah, I will. He said that you guys were like best friends when you guys were on the Eagles. So it was pretty cool. We made that connection the first day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, dude. So we used to get done with Friday practice, and John used to go eat, and then he would go home, and then I would always lift weights, and then I would eat, and then I used to drive over and meet him at the house. And like Runyon's claim to fame, you're going to laugh at this, is he could drink a case of beer before it got warm. He would take it out of the fridge, and he could drink that before any, like, while they were still ice cold. And so I would try to show up and awesome. I could gauge how many drinks he had based on what was in the 12er. And so we'd sit down and like the other hilarious thing is Runyon loved to drink and watch the Weather Channel. He was like talk about quirky. Like he loved to watch the Weather Channel to the point where I would always ask him like, I'd be like, so what's the weather like going to be today? He'd be like, you know what? There's going to be a pressure front that's moving in. It's not supposed to snow to this and this. Like he had the fucking thing dialed to the point wherever we were going. I'm like, hey, John, what's the weather going to be like today? He'd be like, it's going to be 72 degrees. We're going to be sunny. We might get a little evening shower, but we're going to be okay. And so our joke was we'd go drink and watch the Weather Channel. And like, dude, John Daniel would hang out with us. And he was like the beer caddy. And just a hilarious time in my life. I regret going to the Chiefs for the mere fact that I like – didn't get more time to spend with Runyon, and I'm bummed that like I got into a contract dispute and got traded. If I could go back in time, I'd be like, just fucking stay. These are great people. You have a great offensive line. Fucking don't worry about that shit. So I'm stoked you get to see him. So let me see what else I got.
That's so cool though. That's like old school NFL. Just like no one does that, you know, anymore. You know, drink on Fridays before a game. Like that's just like. When you hear those kind of stories about like your like generation of NFL players, like it's just like awesome. It's just old school NFL to me.
Yeah. Well, Runyon said the best way you play on Sunday is if you have a hangover on Saturday. So our deal was like the way that you play good on Sunday was you have to be hungover on Sunday. So that means you had to drink enough on Friday to have a 2-day hangover. And, I was like, yeah, it makes total sense. And now that I think back on it, I was like, we were like, what the fuck were we thinking? I was like, dude, and then when I went to the Chiefs, I remember telling guys that, and they were like, are you fucking insane? I'm like, this is what we did, and we kicked ass. But yeah, that was a time before cell phone cameras too.
Yeah.
So we could go out and have a good time. There was a private club in Philly that was like an invite members only that was like on the back of a pizza shop. You walk through the pizza shop, mm-hmm. You go up these stairs, and it was literally like it was all tables and like bottle service and like lockers, and you had to like have a membership card. So there was like, you know, like no phones. So you had to put your phone in the locker, and you know, it was kind of like a place you could go and hang out and have a good time. And now I think for you guys, like, fuck, you can't even leave your house. I mean, if you guys were to go out into a public place and have a drink, especially in the city, you'd have fucking Snapchats and videos and this, and then all of a sudden they tag the teams, and then next thing you know, you end up with some, you know, like little dude coming down and being like, "Oh, the general manager wants to see you up in his office," and he's like, "Oh, I heard you were I heard you were at the local bar having a drink," and you're like, "What the fuck?" So I can't imagine with the optics today, being able to pull off any of the shenanigans we pulled off. So I feel bad for you, but honestly, it's probably better that you're at home just hanging out, not getting into trouble, because we tried to get as much trouble as possible.
I mean, it's definitely a fun hour for you guys. Like, it's true though. Like, you have to be careful what you go out there and do. And people are taking videos and they see a big group of big guys and they're like, they kind of know what the deal is. So
yeah. No, it's
that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, we went out and raised hell, and like, I think we did it with not realizing that that was like the ending of an era. So, but yeah, that fucking Runyon, man, like, and so what's hilarious is now he's in like charge of NFL and finding people. And I was joking with him. I was like, how disingenuous do you feel? He's like, not at all. I know what the, you know, like, I don't see anything fucking wrong with it. Fuck these guys. He's like, you know, somebody has to bring law and order. I was like, you were by far the most fucking lawless thug, fucking crazy dude I know. And he's like, yep, perfect person to do this.
That's awesome.
Yeah. If Runyon comes and visits his son, or you get a chance to meet him, dude, like, he is probably one of the most legendary dudes I've ever met in my life, and like one of the best people. I fucking love him to death. I'm sad that when I went to go play on another team, I wasn't able to kind of keep it together. And then he had a big birthday party. I think it was for, I can't remember if it was for his 50th. I think his 50th birthday. And he shot me an invite, and I was all set to go. And then you know, we teach a private gig for the guys at DevGrew, and they were supposed to start on Monday and Runyon's party was on Saturday. So I was going to fly in, go to the party, fly home Sunday. They all showed up on Friday to kind of do like their pre kind of deal. So like five of them showed up and basically like totally derailed everything. And like the guys showed up and like we took the kids to dinner, which was kind of neat because I took the kids out to dinner with the guys. And one of the guys that was there actually was on the Bin Laden raid. And so it was telling some like cool stories, like not like, you know, the butler was like, oh yeah, you know, I was on the one that crashed. So it was kind of neat that the kids got to hear that. And then when we later on, when we like, hey, what was that guy talking about? So like there was some cool stuff, but yeah, I ended up having to like, you know, hang out with those guys, which wasn't a bad thing, but I missed Runyon's party and I was really pissed about it because the pictures look good and it would have been great to see everybody. So, I fucked that one up, but, He's a massive human being and just a fucking kick in the pants as a human, dude. I love that dude. So if you get a chance to meet him, tell him hello. And I talked to him the other day.
I'll be on the lookout, see if he's out here.
Oh yeah, you see him. He like wears glasses now. He looks kind of old, but fucking don't let the looks fool you. That motherfucker will tear you. Like, dude, he's the best. Jacob, our producer and video guy, had a pretty funny comment that he asked me. He goes, ask Will, who's the guy on the team who absolutely does not need to be on a mic'd up segment, but you secretly wish he was mic'd up?
Ooh, good one.
It's a good question, Jacob.
I think that there is two that come to mind right away. One is John Allen. He played for the Redskins Commanders past couple of years. First year with Minnesota, we came in together as free agents. He just keeps it real. He'd be funny to hear on a mic'd up. I don't know if you could play everything that he'd be saying, but it'd be pretty awesome to hear him. And then Michael Juergens, one of our offensive line, played a couple games of center this year. Hilarious dude, really funny, just sarcastic, and I think you would get a lot of really good mic'd up content out of him. So those would be my two picks in the trenches.
So what about Braden Smith?
Braden Smith, he would not hear a whole lot of him on the field. He's pretty quiet when he plays. It would kind of be like the Daniel Jones mic'd up that the Colts played, where it's just kind of videos of him running around not saying anything. I think that's one you get out of Braden.
Yeah,
until you're winning in the game winning drive. When we played Tennessee in 23 and we were kicking their ass pretty good, Braden got animated at the end of the game. And that was pretty fun to see. Like, he was like oh, let's go. Like he was getting after, like he was showing some emotions. It was awesome. Yeah, that was a fun Braden. That would have been a cool game for him to be mic'd up.
Isn't it funny where all of a sudden guys that are usually pretty quiet and all of a sudden they like start talking and you're like, what happened to fucking you? Did you wake up? But yeah, I had, you know, obviously you set me up with Braden to have him on the podcast. Yeah. And
great dude. He's awesome.
Yeah, he was great. He, I could tell he wasn't a seasoned podcaster either because it was almost like pulling teeth. And like I was like had 10 questions and I burned through like 7 of them in the first like 6 minutes because he was giving me like one word responses. And I was like, Jesus. Like this is a give and take. And then I figured out pretty early on that like, you know, we were going to have to like, cause I was trying to get into a bunch of origin stories to like kind of figure out like, cause you know, and then like his ayahuasca or sorry, his Abigaine journey and some of the things that he happened. And we had to get to that really quick. And at that point he opened up and the next thing that we started talking about farming and like the dude fucking personality exploded. He all of a sudden, like, he's like, you know, I didn't realize that like the way he envisions himself is sitting on a tractor, like working the land. And that was kind of neat to like realize that like he's, you know, a extremely talented fucking world beating football player, but like his real passion in life is fucking farming and working this land and like what he can like put in to like make it turn into something. And like it was neat to like see that level of excitement, because if you think, you know, you meet most fans and they figure like playing football and being a professional football player is like the panacea. It's like fixed everything. It's like your sole desire in life. And then when they start talking to you about it and then they realize early on that like, this is what you do all day. And the last thing you want to do is come home and talk about it. They like kind of get butthurt. They're like, bah, like super mad about it. And then you just have to figure out like a big part of conversation, especially doing podcasts, is finding and connecting things with the guests. And for him, and I had questions, I was like thinking his journey in this, turned out it was farming. Farming was his fucking deal. And like sitting on a tractor with his kids and like working the land was really what his like passion is. And it was neat to see that come out in him. And, you know, like when I was kind of asking him for, you know, a little bit of like, you know, football stories animated, just none, just like, I don't know. I don't hear anything. I don't see anything. I don't even know their names. So I just fucking go out and beat people up. And I was like, all right, this is pretty good. Let's talk about farming and shit. Yeah. I was like, fuck this guy.
I mean, to that point, like obviously a guy that like went through a lot last year, like had a tough journey, but like is now like on the other side of that and, you know, feels a lot better after doing all those treatments and all that stuff. But like when you get him going on the farming stuff, like super passionate about that, like that was super cool for me because it's like, you know, I don't know a whole lot about it, but like when I got him like to, you know, open up about, you know, what is his goal after football and stuff like that. And he talks about stuff like, it's really cool to hear because it's like, you get all these different people from different walks of life and like what they're actually interested in when you can hear their actual hobbies and something that you don't know a lot about. Like it's fun. Like it's fun to hear about all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And, you know, and then like his, I think it's his wife's family has this huge plot. I think it's down in Tennessee and that's what he does. And, it was neat to see him having an outlet, you know, that didn't look like, I don't know, fucking, you know, making it rain and, you know, strip clubs and, you know, fucking gold teeth and, you know, 24 inch wheels. So, that was neat to see him kind of like come up and, you know, and then the other issue you run into, especially on podcasts as a current NFL player, which is a little different than me, whereas, you know, you're still on an active team. And I always feel like a lot of times on podcasts, especially with current players, like the people that are trying to get you to say shit as like aha moments. And so you have to be, you know, somewhat a little bit guarded. But I also have to remember, like, I'm not trying to get any aha moments. What I'm trying to do is like for this podcast, especially like let people see that like offensive linemen have good personalities. Like it was like when we started doing this or I'd meet people, they're like, wow, I didn't know offensive linemen were smart or articulating this. And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about? What do you think? There's a bunch of dumb lugs. And they're like, yeah. And I was like, well, who do you think the smart people are? They're like, well, the quarterbacks. I'm like, yeah, fuck those guys. I was like, you know what? Like it's always the most intellectually stimulating, funniest, most quirky, like hilarious dudes are always offensive linemen. And so much so that I think that one dude from the Titans has that, what is it, Bussin' with the Boys?
Oh yeah, he's Taylor's funny. Yeah. He's got him and Will Compton get a good podcast. They're hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, they're funny dudes and they got good senses of humor and like, you know, I think he started as I was ending. So I never really got a chance to see him on tape or any of that stuff. But like, it's kind of funny as a offensive lineman, and I'm sure you do this too. You watch so much film on guys that you end up kind of like creating a narrative, at least I did, on like what the person was like. And then when you meet them, you're like, I've been watching you for years. And then you kind of hope that like their personality kind of matches how you've kind of been, or at least you imagine them. And then sometimes it's good. And then other times you're like, no, this is fucking not at all what I was expecting out of this dude.
Like, it's fun when you can play a guy that like you want to hate, and then like he talks a bunch of shit and you can hate him. But then it's like the worst when they're like, oh, good block, man. Or like they're like kind of patting you on the back while you're playing, like, I fucking hate that.
Well, we, you know, because I used to hang with Tony Gonzalez, and so we'd always end up in like cool spots. And there was a defensive lineman for San Diego Chargers named Luis Castillo. And Luis is the nicest fucking dude on the planet. And I played against him a lot, and he was like a pretty, I think he played at Ohio State. Maybe somewhere else, but yeah, I thought he played there. But he was a pretty excitable guy, so he used to get real like real wound up and like kind of like talk real, like had this kind of like almost like voice would get a little squeaky and like kind of run his mouth. And I started kind of like being like, fuck this guy. And then when I met him socially in the off season, nicest fucking dude on the planet. And yeah, and I was always like, fuck, because I was having to play against him because he would play the three. And I kind of, and this is fucking awful, but he fucked up his elbow pretty good. He hyperextended his elbow. So he went in and had surgery and the whole deal. And then they like taped the shit out of it, and he'd wear a cast and like, or this, like this brace. So he was talking to me a bunch about his elbow, and I was like, oh shit. So when I went to go play against him, I'm like looking at that elbow and I'm like, So he had a move where all of a sudden he gave you a shimmy and a club. And he used to club you with the arm that had the brace on it. So I kind of set soft and I saw the shimmy and I kind of lifted my arm on purpose. And I was trying to get him to like fucking, instead of hit me in the shoulder and drive me this way, I was trying to get him to hit me in the armpit. And so I lifted and when he went for the shimmy, he like clubbed me, at which point I rolled over and basically trapped his arm in my armpit. And then I grabbed him, leaned back, and his arm did this, and I took off running and jumped in the air. And he fucking did this and like literally like launched him backwards and used his arm as the spring. Yeah, that was really fucked up because I re-hyperextended his elbow.
That's awesome.
And he fucking left, and that was the end of the game for him. And I saw him, and like after I was like, dude, I'm so sorry. I don't know what happened. And he was pretty pissed. But I felt like it was one of those things where like I wasn't intending to do it, but I'd seen this kind of shimmy in the club, and I was kind of like, fuck, he's gonna club me with this fucking arm that has this massive fucking elbow brace on.
You can't let that happen to you.
Yeah, and yeah. I was like, dude, if I get a shimmy club and this dude hits me in the shoulder and knocks me over and is able to slip it, it's gonna look bad. And like I was like, all right, so when I punch, I'm just gonna lift my arm and see if I can trap him. And literally, he shit it low, like right on the side of my body, and I just fucking lynched him under. And then I was like doing this and jumped, and it was hilarious on film because you see me hook him, and then I take off running and I jump in the air, and he fucking goes back and like explodes back, and the guys were like, "What the fuck is going on here?" We like watched it 10 times, and I told them, and they were like, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" And I was like, fuck. And then when I saw him, I'm like, I'm so, yeah, I was like, man, there were so many opportunities where like weird stuff happened where it's like, man, like, so I'm like, this is the norm for you. But, I remember the first time where they strung the field with, cameras over the field.
Yeah.
So like back in the day, they didn't have that. They just had like set cameras. And then all of a sudden we came out and the entire fucking field was covered with these wires and they were shooting these cameras back and forth. So all of a sudden you're like in the huddle and you're standing there like this in the quarterback, and you can look and you can see this camera fucking pointing at your face. And they're, you know, and now what they've done is they've had so many cameras on the field, they can do 3D modeling. Which was eventually,
gotcha.
So now like that, you know, when you're watching the NFL stuff, they'll like stop the game and they'll kind of like do this kind of 3D modeling where they show all this stuff. It's because they have all those cameras. But that was kind of weird where all of a sudden you were like, man, the big guy's looking at me. And then sure enough, like something happens, like you get a penalty or you fuck up, and then you see the camera looking right at you, and you know, they're talking shit on you, and you're like, God damn it. Wish this camera wasn't chasing my face.
Like on the film now, you can get the TV copy as part of the cut-up.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, you know, play him a penalty. It's like you go to the next thing, and it's like Monday Night Football, and it's just your sweaty face, or, you know, the eye black running down your face. your name's all over the screen. You're like, okay, like 85% of the fan base hates me now.
I was laughing that your mascara was running during the game. I was like, I couldn't, dude, I saw you and I was laughing. I was like, look, his mascara is running, which was my standard joke because John Randall used to paint his face black, but John Randall was super dark. So he would paint like this, like the super, like this warrior thing on his face, but you couldn't see it. And I'd be like, I'd always fuck with him. Which wasn't good because he was really good and he used to fucking kill us. But I'd be like, Randall, I was like, what the fuck, dude, your mascara's on, but I can't tell. And, he was, man, he, dude, we went to go play Seattle and, he had like the most wicked spin move you've ever seen. And, Trey Thomas was playing against, Grant Winstrom. And he was super nervous on Grant Winstrom because Grant Winstrom had this, you know, really like he would like shoot, like he had a really hard inside charge, but he used to like use that deal to like basically set you up to where you'd step down too hard and then he'd do this kind of jump out move. And so Trey got real nervous. So the problem is with John Randall, like you couldn't set him deep because his spin move. So you had to kind of like, just like quick 1-2 set him and kind of stay on the line. And then when he would spin, because he would spin in place. So he would take a step and then he would spin in place. So his goal was when he would take a step and spin, he wanted people to overset him. And most guys get like when they spin, they like gain distance. He didn't gain distance. Yeah. He like spun like a top. So the problem, so what he would do is when he spun, most guys would overset him and then there'd just be a huge gap. And then he had fucking free ability to get wherever he wanted. So he kind of had to short set him, wait on the spin and then react. And, Winstrom did like a head move. Trey got nervous, stepped inside, and his inside leg basically stepped on the outside of my ankle and blew my ankle out.
Oh.
So that was awful. So like literally just implodes my ankle, like you rolls it in, like they got to cart me off the field. And then I go over and they basically like cast my ankle and they're like trying to get me back in there. And I'm like, I can't fucking take a step. And they were like, you have to get back in there. And I was like, all right. I was like, but I was like, dude, he's going to look at this cast. He's going to throw me a move. And like, it's not like I'm not going to be able to do anything. And they were like, no, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. So I go out there and I see him walk over to the line. He like looks at my ankle, looks at me and he starts laughing. And I get down in the stance. He like throws this shimmy. I plant and fucking literally just my ankle buckles and I fall down and he sacks the quarterback. And so then... end of the year, we go to the Pro Bowl and, we're at the Pro Bowl and we're all sitting around having drinks and he sits down and he's looking right at me and he like orders drinks and he's like, man, you remember at the Eagles, I had that left guard that got his ankle hurt and I beat him on that spin move for a sec. What happened to that motherfucker? And, he said it to, and like McNabb and the guys were sitting right there and he was looking right at me when he said it. And I was kind of like his fucking game of middle finger. Drinks are on him. And so, yeah, I had to buy a bunch of drinks, but it was really fucking funny to the point where and then he was like, man, he's like, I saw you get your ankle blown out and then they taped you and pushed you back in. He's like, Jesus Christ. He's like, that was the worst fucking thing. And he goes, and then I hit you with that spin move. I'm like, do you just want to keep reliving it all night? Like, let's keep reliving it. Yeah, it was, dude, that was, you know, like one of those funny NFL moments. And then, you know, obviously you see him get inducted to the Hall of Fame, probably like, I think the best defensive lineman in history. So I didn't feel bad about it, but yeah, that was sitting at the Pro Bowl and having him make fun of me was in front of like 50 dudes was, it hurt. So let's do a little bit of segment on the Super Bowl. It's coming up. You had the chance to play against both of these teams, Seattle and the Patriots, which is dope. I played against them too. So what do you think about this matchup? Is there anything that like the media is overlooking or like, well, what are the key matchups or what are the things you're excited for and how do you think it's going to go?
I don't know. I feel like anything, maybe I'm biased, but it always comes down to O-line, D-line play. I think both teams have a really good defense, like playing against both these teams, both really good D-lines, like strong interior guys. So I don't know. I think it's going to be largely dependent on how, you know, the interior of the pocket does. I think both sides have good interiors, like guards I like watching throughout the league. So I'm excited to see the matchup. I don't know what's really being overlooked. I think that, you know, both these quarterbacks are studs, like, you know, Sam's had a great year for Seattle and, you know, Drake May, younger guy for New England's kind of, you know, came into his own, had a great year. So like, it's really tough to say. I think it's gonna be a good game. I don't think it's gonna be very high scoring just because, you know, how good the defenses are. So, I don't know, maybe I'll be wrong, but, that's kind of, what I'm thinking on it.
Okay. Did you also see, and you're going to laugh at this, did you also see that the NFL announced an Australia game next year with 8 other international games?
Yes, we had the privilege of playing in 2 this year, back-to-back, Dublin and London.
How was it?
That was that was pretty miserable.
Why?
So I've never been either place, so I guess that's cool, but you don't get to really do a whole lot. So we played in Dublin at a soccer stadium. Like, that was a pretty cool experience. Like, I didn't mind that, but then we flew directly to London, had to spend a week in an old, I don't even know what you would call it. I guess it's a manor, and it had no AC, and you're living out of a hotel for a week. The place feels kind of haunted. Like, it was just not a fun experience for that week. I mean, it's kind of cool because like other sports teams get to do like these week long trips, and like, so it's a good like bonding thing. You know, we're kind of just, you know, shooting the shit all week and hanging out, but like, it was pretty miserable.
Well, the problem is you go to practice and then they're kind of keeping you sequestered. So it's not as if you got to go out and sightsee and, you know, go and fuck around in London and have fish and chips and drinks and like, you know, whereas like every other sport, and I don't think people realize this, like baseball players, like they go on the road and like, you know, they have a game that night. They like go to museums, they hang out, they like go play golf. Yeah. They like, you know, do all these things. Basketball guys, same things. Like they travel, they like get to go see the cities and hang out. Football, for some reason, they like fly in, you don't fucking see anything, and you get on a bus and you leave. No. And people are like, how is it? You're like, I don't know. I saw the hotel. And like, there's really like no opportunity to do anything. But I mean, Australia is a hell of a flight. I mean, that's like an entire
I don't know. I mean, I got to imagine it's the Rams, I think, is playing that game. But whoever they're playing, I hope it's another West Coast team. That's a monster flight.
Well, what they'll probably do is they'll probably do that flight, and then the next week will be a bye. So they'll probably, like, get you back late and fuck your entire bye week up. But with this, like, shitty
game. That's what
happened to us. Yeah. They're like, hey, you know what? Well, we'll do this international thing. We'll give them a bye. But then you fucking get home from this trip and you get home late, and then you're just fucking the bias smash because you're like, God damn, I got to, like, I played 2 games.
You're just tired all week. Yeah, you're tired. Trying to recover.
Yeah. It was, but yeah, that's, I think the NFL's taking it to heart, you know, the idea that, like, the Super Bowl is the world champion, but yet, like, there's no world stage. So, like, it's kind of disingenuous because it's only played here in America. So I think the NFL is looking at it like, you know, I can't imagine them, like, moving a current NFL team to a different international city. Like, there's no fucking way.
No. Right? That'd be insane. I think it is cool for, like, the fans are really into it. Like, I don't know if they know exactly what they're cheering for, but like, they're loud the whole game. Like, when we played in Germany 2 years ago, loud the entire game.
They have like loud whistles. The entire game. Were they blowing whistles and making all these crazy noises?
Yeah, it was just like, it was like you were playing in a, I mean, it was soccer stadiums and they were really nice, but like, it was just like, I think that's just how they're used to cheering. It's just loud.
Yeah. So just to finish up on the Super Bowl, do you have a prediction? Are you rooting for one team in particular, or who do you think is going to take it home?
I'm not really rooting for one team. Like I said before, I'll probably just watch the O-line, D-line play because that's what interests me the most. It's usually what I watch, you know, by week. I'm watching the O-line, D-line anyway. I think Seattle will probably win. I just feel like they're kind of on pretty good hot streak. I mean, New England's going to be prepared really well. I think Coach Vrabel's a really good coach, I think. So it's tough to say. I think Seattle will probably win. They just kind of seem like they've been on a pretty good heater here as of late and kind of showing together some pretty strong performances.
Okay. Well, we'll go with that. And, I'm rooting for the Patriots just cause, I know Vrabel and played against him. He was a good teammate and, not the type of dude that you look forward to playing against. He's a fucking asshole, but, in a good way. So I'll be rooting for them and then you can root for Seattle. But, hey dude, thanks for jumping on the podcast and doing this little segment for the Super Bowl. I look forward to when you come visit, we can actually sit down here and really kind of chop it up and, see what this thing looks like going forward. But, have a good training and enjoy Arizona and hopefully I'll see you soon. And, thanks for tuning in to Power Athlete Radio. See ya. This episode of Power Athlete Radio is powered by Train Heroic, the most immersive strength training app experience on the market. We've built an online training business by partnering with Train Heroic to deliver all of our world-class training programs like Jack Street, Hammer, Field Strong, and Grindstone. To learn which Power Athlete training program best suits your goals, head to powerathletehq.com/training. And if you're a coach looking to build a business with the best training tech in the business, head to trainheroic.com/powerathletehq. And now back to the show. Hey there, Power Athlete Nation. Big shout out to all the heavy hitters who stuck around till the final whistle. If you've been soaking in the knowledge bombs and epic tales we've been dropping for free, here's your chance to be a game changer. Swing by klfi.com/powerathlete and toss a few bucks our way to keep the podcast fueled and firing on all cylinders. That's ko-fi.com/powerathlete. Your support makes a difference. See ya.